Grief. People hang on to grief for lifetimes. About everything that's possible to die has died around me. How long are you going to hang on to the grief about that? I'll tell you how long to keep it. About 1 second. Let it go, the instant it happens. Just let it go. Surrender it completely and totally to God, the instant it happens. Huh. Why? Because you develop the capacity to do that. So the reason for spiritual training, then, is you develop a powerful capacity to let go of anything. And you never know when it's going to come up. So-and-so just died. You just let go that instant. The minute the phone message comes in, you let it go. You don't grieve about it 30 years later. You don't celebrate every anniversary of the death of Cuckoo, your little bird. And the next 2 weeks later, you got to celebrate the breath of Uncle Louie. And then a month later, it's a time to celebrate the death of Aunt. Your mother's death comes up. The anniversary of all this shit. As you get older and older, the whole calendar is the anniversary. It's a crap. We're going to keep pumping 9/11 forever. We already got December 5th, right? Okay, then you got 1776, you got the end of World War I, and we got November 11th. Don't forget November 11th at 11 a.m. When I grew up, November 11th, 11 a.m. was Armistice Day. We all held our heart. There's a beautiful value to it. I'm just talking about the downside of it. It's one thing to give respect and send love to all those people and to do so out of reverence. Huh? All right. We're talking about the fact that what makes these things tenacious is, first of all, you're trained in them. Your mind thinks this way. But after you're aware that you're trained in them and your mind thinks this way and you see the absurdity of the idea of causality, you'll find that your mind still wants to do this, and you say, why is my mind still doing that when I know better? And a spiritual student usually goes into that. I know better. How come I'm still hating that guy and I want to get even with him? Why did I give him the finger? I told you the pleasure I got. The first and only time I ever did it in my life. It was terrific. I can see why those guys are out there throwing stones at the Jews, and the Jews are throwing at the Arabs, and everybody's wanting to kill each other. I mean, it's terrific. Take that. I mean, that's a high like. Beats riding bucking broncos, you know what I mean? Got more drama. You see those guys out there at a rodeo, and there's a whole bunch of them sitting behind me, and they've all their own casts. All of them cast. They've all got all cripping up from riding these bulls, you know. Can't wait to get on the next one. The juice you get off of that, you know. I mean, the guy's got, see, he's had 6 fractures over the last 5 years riding bulls, and he's going to get right back on the next bull. Oh my gosh. Extreme sports, huh? All right, so willingness then, because that's one really important aspect of love. It's willingness that's going to really take you up here. Because willingness is going to give you the motivation to accept things. It's also going to take you past reason, which is the big roadblock. The big roadblock. Most of the people that go into spiritual work are usually in the 400s. I mean, many of them, the 10 lectures like this, are usually in the 400s. In which reason brings them here, and now reason becomes the block. Because very few people to get to love, we said love, to transcend the 400s, is accomplished by about 4% of the population. 4%. Whoa. To get to unconditional love is 0.4%. 0.4%. Where's the numbers that go on all this stuff? Oh, here they are. Four percent. At 540, 0.4%. Wow. So we talk about love a lot, but as a to realize one's identity as that which is the source of life itself is not all that easy to I wouldn't say achieve, but that easy to realize. And therefore, I mentioned the things that I think can be useful that are generally available. Not everybody can go off and join an ashram. Not everybody can walk away from their family and their job, etc. So how can this go then? So the willingness to let go of positionalities, the willingness to surrender, not the things themselves, but the attachment to the things themselves. You don't have to give up your Cadillac. But you let go of its former meaning to you. You let go striving for success, because to realize the truth is the epitome of success. To realize the truth of who you are. So renunciation then means eventually an inner renunciation. The willingness to let go of insisting that if a thing isn't logical, it can't be true, and all these kind of positionalities. The willingness to then let go of everything that stands in the way of love. As we do that, we find that the things that keep coming up that block us from love then are feelings, and these feelings are based on certain perceptions, ways of seeing things, ways of interpreting them, conditionalities that we've been brainwashed into, and ask, am I willing to surrender that to God? Would I rather be right, or would I rather realize the presence of God? So willingness then always puts up the untruth against the truth, and asks, are you willing to let this go? To be unwilling to let go attachment to Kitty would mean grief, wouldn't it? You'd be setting yourself up for grief. I lose the cat. Night's going to be awful. Tomorrow I won't be able to lecture. I'm just going to be grieving and weeping and gnashing my teeth, right? So you see, the unwillingness then is what sets you up for this. You say to yourself, am I willing to set myself up for this or let it go? Now, that makes it a little more real, doesn't it? If you're willing to let it go for some airy-fairy sounding thing like the presence of God, which sounds good, but who knows what that is. But you might be willing to let it go, because if you don't, this is where you're going to end up. End up down the scale. Suffering from, you see, wanting this is an endless suffering, isn't it? Because wanting this, the constant wanting things, is constantly setting you up with desire. You're always wanting something. I only really have one want left in the world. I keep it there. I cherish it. One worldly want. I said, God, can't I have just one? I don't really have it. I have a picture of it. And I carefully nurture this want, because I'm afraid if it disappears, you become invisible. Keeps you here to some degree. You need one want and one attachment, something. I'm not going to change. I was showing people a picture of it yesterday. Anyway. The willingness to renounce it. Am I willing to renounce it? Yes. In fact, it just went. Well, okay. All right, so what we're developing is the spiritual muscles, so that when you need them, they're there. As I step over the rattlesnake, there I am on the top of Schnibbly Hill, And I was looking at a big place there. And as I step over it, good God Almighty, there is the hugest rattler you ever saw. Good Lord. And in that instant, there was letting go at absolute depth. And absolute letting go-ness. All fear disappeared. All perception of it as a possible enemy. And in its place, there was a profound stillness and peace that was infinitely powerful. The presence of love, of the presence of God, is so powerful it sweeps away everything. And so the snake is held there, suspended just like that. Can't move. That profound state of peace, the stillness of the presence of God, holds all within itself. And nothing can withstand it. So when you need it, that capacity was already perfected to completely let go, totally, at all, at great depth. And otherwise I wouldn't be here today, because the snake would have just done a snake thing and I just do my human thing, and you know, we both would have been in trouble, you know. So a higher state prevailed. So you never know when you're going to need this capacity.